Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Dr. Curlin pulled 4-year-old Deanna's medical folder from the file against the wall and walked in for her checkup. "Say hi to Dr. Curlin," Deanna's mother coached her from her chair by the window. Oblivious to her mother as well as the pediatrician, Deanna sat engrossed in a set of dolls, all dressed in bright-colored velvet jumpsuits with various shapes, like antenna, sticking out of their heads. "What you got there, Deanna?" ventured Dr. Curlin, bending over.
"These are my fuzzy friends, Tiny, Tweedle, Tailey, and Tally," Deanna introduced each doll with pride.
"Nice to meet you all," smiled Dr. Curlin, noting Deanna was dressed in the same bright velvet jumpsuit with an identical headband of her own in her hair. "Let's climb up on the table," he offered, "and see how you are today."
"Oh, I'm fine," she stood up, clutching her favorite doll in her arms. "Tally and I both eat Fuzzy Friend snacks every day. They taste yummy, you know."
Dr. Curlin caught Deanna's mom's helpless shrug of her shoulders. She murmured, "They're everywhere. What can you do?" From a parent's perspective, what should we know and what can we do about advertising aimed at children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today serves as a spokesperson against inappropriate media messages for children. Dr. Michael Brody is a child psychiatrist in private practice and director of the Psychiatric Center. He chairs the Television and Media Committee of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry and represents this organization in Senate hearings, the FTC and FCC, on media issues. He has consulted to the White House and chairs the celebrity section of the Association of Popular Culture. He is also a professor at the University of Maryland, where he teaches a course on children and television. Dr. Brody is the father of 2 grown sons. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Brody.
Good to be here.
What is it about advertising these days that should concern parents?
One thing has to do with it's tremendously pervasive. It fills all spaces, not just for children, but for adults as well. You have to consider this in several different levels. The most important level has to do with the stories that kids hear and the stories that kids read about. Stories are very, very important. They're the essence. They have to do with meanings and the meanings of life. For many years, advertising was a result of children's programming. First, you had the program, and if the program was very successful, I know in my day, a program like Howdy Doody or even a Western like Hopalong Cassidy, if the program was very successful, then they developed lunchboxes and comic books. The Howdy Doody show was essentially a puppet show, and they had a live MC whose name was Buffalo Bob, who was actually the voice of Howdy Doody, but he was also the producer of the show. At one point, Weston Publishing came to Buffalo Bob and they said, "We'd like to put out a comic book based on your television show." He thought it was excellent publicity. But after 15 million comic books were sold, he was very distraught because he didn't get any of the royalties. From that time on, most of the stories on the show and most of the characters was geared to this object of licensing and merchandising. They immediately took Princess Summerfall Winterspring on the show, which was not only a boon to little girls and selling them little Indian girl outfits and Indian dolls, but a lot of fathers liked to look at her as well. So that was a plus in its sense.
She wasn't a puppet, right?
She was not a puppet, Princess Summerfall Winterspring. Actually, she later in life got to star in a movie with Elvis Presley. She was quite attractive. At any rate, this was the first start of this, of using the actual programming to sell merchandise to children. In the 70s, primarily as a result of Star Wars, George Lucas has always said he is a toy maker. He is not a film director. He has said this many times. Many of the toys were produced before the film was even made. And then you had the concept of Strawberry Shortcake, where they developed the doll first, and then they had a TV show about her. So in many ways, stories are compromised by the merchandising. There was a wonderful show on PBS, which still airs, but they stopped producing it, called Wishbone, about this little dog who goes back in time and it promotes reading and so forth. But they canceled the show because there was only this little dog and you couldn't have the merchandising that you would have with a program like Sesame Street with so many characters, or the Teletubbies. So merchandising and advertising and licensing has definitely affected children's programming, the content of the programming. Then in terms of advertising, you also have the issue, which is a big problem, of what is advertised on television for children. Toys and fast food. Now, unfortunately, the toys that are advertised on television aren't the open-ended toys like blocks, baby dolls, doll houses, clay, crayons. They're the scripted licensed toys that are based on the television shows. These toys do not promote development. They do not promote language skills. They don't promote motor development. And of course, we now know the problems that have arisen as a result of fast food. We have an epidemic of childhood obesity in our country. Children are suffering from more asthma, respiratory diseases. Children, 10 years ago, you did not see type 2 diabetes, which is a form of diabetes that is not brought on by genetics. It's a type of diabetes that's brought on by overweight. And now there is an epidemic of this in our country to such an extent that public health officials are now paying attention to what is advertised on television. Now, this is only two levels of this. The third level is kids see advertisements for things that may be inappropriate for them to see. The number of beer commercials and the messages of the beer commercials with the objectification of women, Victoria's Secret commercials, which may be a little bit too overwhelming for some children. And some of these commercials are geared to children. The cute little frogs in the Bush commercials are outrageous. There was a big uproar about Joe Camel using a comic character to sell cigarettes. Well, to me, this is the same thing. So even the products that are being seen on television is very difficult. People believe, corporations believe, the earlier they could brand kids, the better it is. They will have these kids for life. So advertising and the amount of money spent on media advertising for children has just gone up into the billions of dollars. It is a very big business. Don't forget, at one time we only had the three networks, then we had some cable stations. Now the Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, they're on 24 hours, and there's 24 hours of this merchandising and this advertising.
I understand that kids are watching electronic media a lot, but how is this different from our generation that grew up knowing all the cigarette and beer commercial lyrics? That was what was on, and it was on at times that now, through FCC regulations, would be considered tremendously inappropriate. What's the difference that you see?
I think a big difference is the quantity. It's not only television. It's in the music. It's when they go to the theater. As we go to the theater, we see advertisements. We never saw advertisements before. Now you pump gas, there's commercials on the gas pump. It's constant. It's always around us.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of kids and advertising.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Michael Brody about kids and advertising.
Many kids today use the internet, and the amount of advertising on the internet, appropriate or not, where there are no rules. The Children's Television Act of 1996 only covers network television. There's supposed to be 10.5 minutes on the weekends of advertising per hour and 12 minutes on weekdays of advertising per hour of commercial television. Every year, I have a class at the University of Maryland. I have them do a research project to count the actual minutes. It's always between 17 and 18 minutes. They are in violation of the act, but the internet doesn't count the act. On the internet, you're allowed to have comic characters advertised. You're not allowed to do that on television. So Ronald McDonald is all over the internet selling his hamburgers. You have a thing on the internet that is unbelievable called cookies or traces. If a kid goes to a Disney website, let's say, or Crayola, at some point, Disney will email the kid back. They'll ask for certain information, and then through the year, the screen will say, happy birthday, Josh. Today's a great day for you. Have you thought of asking your mother to take you to see such and such? Or the thing that really outraged me with Warner Brothers, we're doing Gotham City Census for Batman. please give us such and such personal information. How many people live in your family? What kind of car does your parent drive? What kind of house do you live in? And so forth. The collection of personal information. And that was one of the reasons that we passed the Children's Online Privacy and Protection Act, the COPPA Act, where kids below age 12 cannot give this type of information. But is there anybody checking whether this is being done? No. No, the FTC doesn't have the manpower to check it, and people do studies occasionally once in a while, and while they say it's better, it's still not the way it's supposed to be. Kids are still being emailed back as a result of these traces of cookies and being micro-targeted. I mean, it's pretty impressive to get an email from one of the Power Rangers asking you to buy one of their watches. This is exploitation. This is unfair advertising because, again, kids below the age of 8, in many ways, don't understand the difference between programming mm-hmm. and advertising. And in many ways, the programming that they see on television is an advertisement. They're one big, long informational, especially if you could buy most of the stuff on the television screen in the toy store.
I'm totally shocked. Dr. Brody, what do you think we should be doing to lessen the effects of advertising on the younger children?
Well, I think it's up to parents in large part, and I think that parents have to serve as models in terms of their media participation. If you turn on the television set and just leave it on in blocks of time rather than specific programs, your children are going to follow suit. I think parents should also watch to some degree what their kids are watching. Some of it is inane, but I think, you know, if your kid is watching, which most kids are, 3.5 hours of television a day, this is an important influence in their life, a very important influence. And when we were fighting for the ratings, the TV ratings, Mr. Valente would constantly say, well, television isn't that much of an influence. Mr. Valente is the head of the Motion Picture Association of America, and he was hired by the networks to lead the battle against the TV rating system, which he lost to some extent and which he won to some extent. But his answer was that there was not really an influence of television. I would ask then, why are advertisers paying so many billions of dollars to advertise if they're not influencing? Of course television has an influence. Parents should watch what their kids are watching. You know, the biggest problem, of course, is the violence on television. The amount of violence that kids watch is far greater than the amount of violence that adults see. Most problems are solved with violence. The violent characters sometimes are very attractive characters, the superheroes. The kids could identify with them. Sometimes the violence is done in a very humorous way, so the kid becomes desensitized against the violence. And the most important thing is you don't see the consequences of the violence of the television. You just see the person knocked out or so forth, like in the video games, which is another whole big issue. But parents should see what their kids are watching. Parents should take the time to do a little media literacy course. And media literacy is nothing more than explaining to your child that the reason for the commercials are to sell things. That's why they have commercials. They want you to buy things. They pay for the programming. They want you to buy things, but that doesn't mean you have to buy everything that you see, because if you do, you're going to grow up to be a very unhappy adult. And this is another problem, actually, with advertising. One of the things that advertising does, both to adults and to children, is to make us very dissatisfied. For teenagers, you smell, your hair is not good, you have pimples, your complexion is bad, you're not beautiful, you're not wearing the right fashion. For kids, you don't have the right toy. It makes us dissatisfied with ourselves. We're unhappy.
Does that translate into interpersonal relations of children in terms of, well, the kid doesn't want to be friends with another kid because he doesn't have the right toys? Is there that kind of materialistic result?
I think, Sandy, that's what they're trying to sell. And if you watch the commercials, which are very concrete, a lot of the commercials directed to us as adults are images and symbols. What do these young women have to do with buying a car? Well, you could guess. You have to make the connection. Or what does the Marlboro man have to do with smoking cigarettes? Okay? There's symbols. They're images. With kids, it's very direct. And when you watch the commercials, the kid is sometimes playing with other kids. And that's the message. You want to play with other kids. You want to get along with other kids. You want to be popular. You have to have the right toys. And again, it goes right to the core issue of making children, just the way they try to make us, feel inadequate.
What tactics can we employ for our adolescents to help them be a more thoughtful audience when they're exposed to this kind of constant advertising?
Well, adolescents are more sophisticated. They do appreciate the ideas of advertising. They do understand. We have to appreciate that children are not small adults, and just the way they develop physically and psychologically in different ways, they also develop cognitively in stages. A five-year-old has a lot of trouble between illogical and logical thinking. A five-year-old hasn't been able to put things into categories yet. Five-year-old depends on perception rather than the reality of the situation. It's easier to fool a five-year-old. Most teenagers have developed the ability to abstract, to think ahead, to understand the symbols, and they understand what commercials are. In fact, they could be very cynical about the commercials. Also, they don't watch as much TV. They're more involved now with the internet and certainly music, but they don't watch as much TV as younger children. But where they do get caught up, unfortunately, has to do, of course, with the smoking, the drinking, and that's another form of advertising. As the cigarette companies have to flee, of course, they can't advertise on television. They're not going to be able to advertise on billboards. They're not going to be able to advertise as much in magazines. They advertise with product placement. So if you have John Travolta on the screen smoking 18 cigarettes or Courtney Cox smoking, that's all kids need to see. It's a fashion statement.
The companies pay their way into these movies?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. To drink Pepsi or drink a certain type of beer. But that's what kids see. They see this on the screen, and this is the way they want to act. So you don't have to have direct commercials. And as a result, the largest growing group of smokers are young women. And again, it's used more as a fashion statement. I think to some degree it's probably used to stem their eating because it kills their taste buds. That's where they get caught up, the teenagers, in fashion, the way they look and how they appear. And the definite thrust is on being cool.
So how can parents combat this, especially if we don't necessarily see the movies that the kids are now going out in bunches to see?
Well, obviously, the more time we spend with our kids, the better they're going to feel about themselves in general. The parent who doesn't give in to any trend is a problem also. A lot of parents are very upset if their kids aren't popular and will allow their kids to walk out of the house in all kinds of costumes, like Britney Spears with exposed navels and so forth. These parents are anxious either about their kids' sexuality or their kids being popular, and it just enables the problem. It pushes the problem. Parents have to have sense that teenagers still are having a lot of trouble with their hormones, controlling themselves, and they still need the guidance of their parents. They should also understand that they should be guiding their children, not allowing the media to guide their children. It's great to have celebrities and to think about the celebrities and to think about their music and their sports abilities, but it's still the parents that should be the role models.
It's hard to believe that characters as innocuous as Donald Duck or Big Bird could be turned into negative influences for our children. Would you explain this phenomenon?
Well, every year I go to the toy show in February. This is a show that's going to bring the toys to Christmas the following December. And more, nearly half the toys now have to do with celebrity-endorsed toys, okay, like Donald Duck. Donald Duck is a celebrity. Mickey Mouse is a celebrity. Winnie the Pooh is a celebrity. Arthur is a celebrity. The cost that this adds to the toys, the licensing costs, are absolutely enormous. The licensing costs as much as to produce the toy. So you can no longer have just a mobile over your baby's bed. You have to have a Winnie the Pooh mobile or an Arthur mobile. So the first thing that happens and the first impact has to do with cost. The second impact that it has to do is what are these characters doing on the screen? What are these characters doing? How are they showing the kids how to live? How are they showing the kids in terms of guidance? Some of these characters are more innocuous than others. But as I mentioned earlier about the Power Rangers and the fact that they solve all their problems by karateing people to death or whatever they're doing, or some of these Japanese anime cartoons like Pokemon, which is was supposed to be nonviolent, but then again, the people again fight to near death. One wonders as to the modeling that these kids develop.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on kids and advertising.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Michael Brody about kids and advertising. What about the Barbie phenomenon?
Barbie has been around for a long time, more than 40 years. The real issue with Barbie is that she's brought us Christmas year-round. You know, toys used to just be sold and parents would have to deal with it either just on a birthday or during Christmas time or Hanukkah. Barbie was the first heavily advertised TV toy, and she showed the toy manufacturers that you could have Christmas year-round in terms of toy sales. Barbie is open-ended in that she never had her own TV program, okay? But there is a script. I mean, she's in love with Ken. Ken takes her out. Barbie is fully accessorized. Accessories are very important to Barbie. She has to look a certain way. And while she's not the sole cause of a subculture of anorexic girls, she's definitely has had her influence. I mean, you just can't develop a figure like that. But one of the things that she's always sold is this basic consumerism. Mattel was formed by Elliot and Matthew. Ruth Handler was married to Elliot, the L of Mattel. She created Barbie. And actually, she ran Mattel for a number of years until she was indicted, enronizing the financials of Mattel. But then again, she did develop I Can't Do Math Barbie. So
great influence.
Right, but they always spoke about age compression, you know, lowering the age when children could play with Barbies and so forth. But age compression also means that younger and younger children are spending their time shopping and so forth. So the sales, and I hate to use this term, sales of Barbie are flat. This is a result of their own age compression. It used to be that every young girl in the United States owned an average of 8 Barbies. That's gone down considerably. People could play with their Barbies. That's the point I'm trying to make. Young girls could play out fantasies. And that's really the most important aspect of play, storytelling. The essence of play is storytelling. And I like to relay this story of once observing my son playing in preschool and taking a doll with a number of his friends and putting the doll in the oven and taking the doll out of the oven. Well, he was telling...
This is not a cooking class. Right?
This is not a cooking class. They were putting that doll in the oven. And it took me a few minutes, you know. I am a psychiatrist, but it was my son, and it took me a few minutes to realize that his story had something to do with the birth of his baby brother.
Oh, goodness.
Who he would like to put in the oven.
Right, and he was working it out because, again, play is also used to heal. Mm-hmm. That's one of the important aspects of play, just the way play is supposed to make the unfamiliar familiar. I also remember how my son carried on that he had to have his own vacuum cleaner. He had to run around with the vacuum cleaner. Of course, I think he was afraid of the noise. And until he realized that it was harmless, he ran around with that vacuum cleaner. But those are the important aspects of play. And I think some people use Barbie and other baby dolls in terms of adult rehearsal for a later time when they'll have their own children or siblings coming into the picture. So play is very, very important in that regard. And one of the problems with the electronic media is that it's made our children viewer consumers rather than a child players. They don't play as much. They don't exercise as much. They just don't tell stories to each other as much. They're using more the media stories.
How has the burgeoning electronic media impacted our children?
The electronic media is with us. There's new technological breakthroughs constantly. Video gaming now earns 2 or 3 times the amount of money that we paid to go to see a films in our country. It's a big, big business. There's no laws to protect children from these technological innovations, which on one side could be quite wonderful, but on the other side, there could be harm. For example, PBS putting on the Teletubbies and targeting 12-month-olds is absolutely outrageous.
Targeting
12-month-olds, yes, that was their target. When people give birth in the hospital, they give a free pack of Teletubby tapes to the new parents. This is done in many places as part of the marketing scheme. And it's just absolutely outrageous. There's three reasons why the electronic media is so powerful and so such an impact on children today. The first thing is that there's been an appreciation that there is a market. It's all economics, and it's a worldwide market. There's billions of dollars involved in it. The second reason has to do with the appreciation of psychology. To use psychology in advertising, and you also use psychology in program content to get kids to watch, kids to identify and plug in. And the third thing, which to me is the saddest, is the recognition by parents that this media could be used as a form of social control, babysitting.
Mm-hmm. Now that we're all suitably upset, what kinds of resources would you suggest for parents who want to pursue the issues involved in kids and advertising?
There's certain organizations that are very involved in this. My own organization, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, there's a website, aacap.org. Actually, on the website, I do reviews of movies, video, music, and even website. The American Academy of Pediatrics is very interested in this issue. They have a whole campaign called Media Matters, and they have a whole slew of brochures, and they have a website as well, aap.org. Then there's people who are specifically interested in advertising. There's a group at Harvard run by Susan Lin at the Judge Baker Center at Harvard University. She has an organization called Stop the Commercial Exploitation of Children. So
and
there
some
are
people,
people
write to that Stop the
yes,
Commercial
yes,
Exploitation.
Yes, at Harvard University, and they could say care of Susan Lin. They would get information. So there's a number of organizations and people that are working on this.
Well, on that happy note, we're delighted that there are people who are working on this, but it sounds like a job for all parents to be working on. Our special thanks to Dr. Michael Brody for providing us with some of the tools we need to deal with advertising aimed at our children.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 166. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, you can visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. There are no W's in that address. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Andrea Tokic. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.